This is ABC Riverina, and you're listening to Digital Living with Dr. Barney Dalgano, Phil Roy, and Delaney, and a special guest this morning, Barney. Who do we have with us?
We've got Jake Wallace with us today, who's a lecturer in information studies at Charles Sturt University. Jake's doing his PhD in a sort of topic which includes sort of social and political issues around online discussion forums, and we wanted to have a chat about the quality of debate online more broadly, and we thought Jake, who we've had on as a guest before, we might get him back and hear a bit more of his eclectic accent.
So Jake, welcome back to Digital Living.
Thank you.
Are we ruder when we're online than we would normally be?
It's difficult to say whether people are more rude online than in real life, because some people are very rude in real life, but there's a lot of potential on the internet for masking who we are, and that anonymity gives us some leeway to be perhaps ruder, perhaps to break some of the social codes that we might normally adhere to when our identity is known to others.
So what have you seen in the research that you've been doing? What have you actually noticed in trends and in material?
Well, my starting point was the idea that the internet was this exciting new environment that offered some fantastic opportunities for the exchange of different perspectives, different points of view, cultural exchange. So an environment where people could enhance their understanding of other people and of the world. And lots of people felt like this through the mid-90s, when the internet was really becoming very popular. But recently we've seen some reports that show that in actual fact what happens is that people are tending to seek out not environments where there are perspectives and points of view that challenge their own, but in fact environments where their own points of view are reflected back at them. So they create an environment where their own worldview is the dominant one, and they're not being challenged.
So they seek out places where their own opinions are confirmed and supported, like-minded people. So these niches are popping up, and we're just as polarised online as we would be over a kitchen table.
That's right, and that's unfortunate given the potential of the internet to connect people with different perspectives and to reinvigorate our quality of democratic debate.
Has truth been lost in all of that? That if we have people seeking out opinions and sites, blogs that support their own worldview, has somewhere in there truth been lost? Because if you don't want to hear that truth, you'll go to find a place that will justify your own perception of things?
To an extent, that's definitely true, in that we've now got a very complex media environment. I mean, we could start off with a very high level philosophical discussion about what is what constitutes truth, but there's a lot of potential now for people to create their own truth. So the technology allows people to create a very individualized media environment, almost to the extent that they can online create what we might think of metaphorically as their own daily newspaper. So rather than having one media environment that we all access and make some sense from, we've now got these very individual little worlds that we can create, and we've got to ask some questions about the extent to which that divides us and the extent to which that can bring us together.
So what we've seen is a global knowledge community turning us as individuals into far more narrow-minded individuals than perhaps we once would have been.
That's right. And it's a shame, because the internet allows everyone to publish. Everyone who's got access to the internet can publish there. It's very straightforward, very simple mechanisms for publishing. And that's very empowering in terms of a democratic culture, because lots and lots of people can express themselves, can present their points of view online, can talk about their own experiences. And you would think that that creates scope for a degree of mutual understanding. So if we shift towards creating media environments that just reflect ourselves back at us, then rather than empowering, we're dividing ourselves.
What's been the result of the rise of the citizen journalist in all of this? Because we once upon a time had the big media machines, but now we have the citizen journalist shaping the information that's out there. So what have you noticed has been the result of that?
Well, that's been a very positive move in many ways, in that it's the empowering side of the technological potential. So it's allowed normal everyday people to hold big business accountable, to challenge some of the assumptions that that our media environment might present, and we've got to look at those kinds of developments as very empowering in a democratic sense.
When you're looking at the either news sites or blog sites where there is a very prescribed opinion, what happens if you don't hold that opinion and you contribute to that site, maybe responding to a blog comment, and clearly you're the black sheep of that group?
Yeah.
What happens to that person if they're contributing? How do the blog sites and contributors react when someone from outside has a say?
Yeah, there can be very extreme and very strong reactions. The term flame wars is a kind of older term that was used on old email lists, what were called listservs, which were communities of email users who would exchange points of view and perspectives, and that kind of idea still transfers to, say, blogging environments where people can present very extreme points of view, and the community that operates around that blog will react very strongly.
And it's largely immediate and largely unmoderated, so it's right there in your face, bang.
Well, it can be. There are degrees of moderation. So it depends on the environment, and it depends on the nature of the community. So some communities will be more reasoned and enlightened than others. But this is one of the trends that we see in the online environment, that it's very much about how communities form in these online spaces and how they interact. And that's what creates the level of debate, the extent to which it's reasoned or rational or otherwise.
Is what we're seeing online... a truer reflection of what we're really like, rather than when you're walking around the street, you have certain checks and balances that say, okay, well, I can't make that comment because it might offend someone. I can't make that comment because it may let me in court. Mm. Are we seeing online people just being honest and being real?
That's probably true, and that's the kind of other side of the coin of that exciting potential that the online environment offer. So it's exciting in that we see some very utopian perspectives on how the internet might enhance our democracy. But the other side of that coin is that we all have a nasty side, and that can come out too.
Well, we were talking before we came on about the different ways in which different types of discussion forums can change the way people actually, the degree to which people are prepared to post, you know, wild and crazy views, I guess. And there's a difference between the sorts of discussion that tends to happen where on forums where you can be completely anonymous versus forums where you subscribe and become a member of a community and have a sort of an online profile, so that you therefore over a period of time people sort of attribute the things that you say to you as a, not as a real, not as a face-to-face identity, but as an identity online.
Well, you have your own reputation on that particular site.
That's right. And I mean, just as in the real world, we tend to behave in a consistent way from day to day. We don't tend to behave completely differently one day to another because we sort of try and be consistent to our perceived identity. We do the same online. So, for example, one type of online discussion forum is where you have, say, news articles that are published in a newspaper that are also published online, and then they have a place up where you can place comments, and just anyone who reads it can go in and type a comment. And so that's pretty much anonymous versus communities where you might subscribe to a particular online discussion forum, or there might be a blog site with comments, but one where people sort of have like a username and a known identity, and you can click on and find out more about that person, and then they subscribe over a period of time. And obviously it's the ones where you're completely anonymous that you get the sort of extremes of opinion, more so than the ones where you've got a maintained identity.
And it seems quite
you know, very simplified and polarised at times. In other words, some of these media sites where you go to and you have a look at the comments that follow a journalist's article, and basically a lot of the comments tend to be along the lines of, you have a different opinion than me, you're a goose, you're an idiot.
So they're sort of like personal attacks rather than genuine debate around the ideas.
That's right.
How much of it, Phil, have you noticed is not commenting on the material of the article or the blog, but is that banter of whose responses meant what, that they've lost track of what the article or blog was talking about and they're becoming just this tit-for-tat.
That's right, and you end up with what Jake said, is a bit of a flame war going on where people just flaming each other. They've got whipped themselves into a frenzy and really have sort of forgotten about or moved on past the actual facts and the message of the article in the first place.
So, Jake, has all this openness, all these wonderful blog sites and articles, has it really opened up discussion at all?
I think it has opened up discussion, but it's also opened up the need for us to think about how we interact in this new space. We're at a point in time where we're having to figure out how we do things like manage our identities in this online environment, so how we create an online identity and how we retain some credibility for that identity. But we also have to think about how we're going to interact with other people in this environment. So we're developing kind of new codes of conduct in terms of online interaction, and I don't think there's a great deal of stability in terms of how those codes of conduct apply, because the networked environment, the internet goes across geographical boundaries, across huge distances. So you might be interacting with someone in a completely different country. So the way that they feel it's appropriate to interact with you might not be the way that you feel it's appropriate to interact.
Is there any difference in the generations? For instance, we grown-ups, when we're on the internet and doing very moderate responses and very rational responses, differ to what Generation Y might be doing and how they use the technology to begin with, the way they see their responses and that function compared to how we would be responding? We'd be doing it more like a letter to the editor response, whereas they would be doing it the same way as they'd be instant messaging.
That's right. And given that I get emails from students that are pretty much written in SMS text language, those differences in terms of how we communicate and interact are really very readily apparent. And so it's kind of a two-way process here. For me, who's perhaps what we might describe as a digital immigrant, someone who's come not late in life but hasn't been born with information technology all around
them. We're all old in this room, Jake. It's
And so there's a difference in terms of those people who've grown up with these technologies and are comfortable interacting with them. So we're definitely learning new ways of interacting.
Will it settle down? Or is this just something we need to stop being so sensitive and precious about it? And if someone tells us that we're a goose, as Phil said, because they don't agree with us, we should just let it go. We're anonymous to them. They're anonymous to us.
Yeah.
If someone said something behind our back and we didn't hear it, should we just let it be water off a duck's back?
I think there will always be those who want to inhabit the fringe, the more extreme areas within debate or political discussion. I don't think that's ever going to go away. But I think that we will see some consistency evolve over time in terms of how we conduct these types of interactions.
Well the sort of tendency seems to be happening in a lot of online communities towards sort of moderation mechanisms, in the early days, moderation tended to be the owner of the list or the owner of the forum would delete postings that were too inflammatory or too personal in their criticism of others. But now we're seeing mechanisms of sort of community moderation through things like rating, where you can rate somebody else's posting or rate that person as a poster or rate the posting, and I guess over time build up a collective rating. And I think Slashdot, which is an IT online sort of news thing, uses that extensively. And so then you can sort of, in a sense, over time, you can get yourself almost relegated to the sort of, you know, scroll down 400 miles before anyone finds your comment because you've consistently said things that the rest of the community thought was ridiculous. So so maybe that's the way it will work rather than getting used people, you know, be developing thicker skins.
And because that's driven by that community, it carries more credibility within the community, so it would be taken more seriously.
That's right.
But I wonder if a side effect of that, Barney, might be the first issue that Jake mentioned, which is about the loss of diversity in the culture, and that if those rating systems actually start picking up people based on their views agreeing with the community and starts to sideline people that have an alternate view, well, maybe it will again contribute to this loss of diversity. It's really interesting. I noticed it myself with my own habits online. I mean, prior to the internet, if I wanted to look at current affairs information, I've got my regular sources. There's the local paper, if you happen to read that. There's you'd buy a metropolitan newspaper, listen to the radio,
and you get what you're given.
Yep.
You get the news they tell you.
That's right. And in Australia, there's a limited choice. You can choose to read The Australian or The Sydney Morning Herald or pick The Age or whatever the newspaper is. There's a little bit of choice, but there's not a lot. I find myself online gravitating towards newspapers which I find more engaging and newspapers that express opinions that are more closely aligned to myself. So, for instance, I go to The Guardian newspaper a lot in the UK because I know that's a publication I have read before in the past, but I know the views there will consider issues that I think are important.
What about broader than going to the dedicated newspaper sites, to the some of the wider shared blog sites, like for instance, there's Newsvine, where people can see articles and then comment on them. There are communities that have popped up where there is still a good degree of, shall we call it, adult rational discussion, that it does allow that forum for debate, that certainly some sections of it are quite polarised, but other sections, it's just good adult discussion that's happening there. Do those sites, will they rise to the fore here, and the sites that will attract those fringe extreme comments in any direction will sort of fall by the wayside, and those people are not interested in going to these major sites anyway?
I think that, in fact, we'll just see a range of different spaces in which people will interact. So those sites that have space for rational discussion and rational debate will attract people who want to engage in rational discussion and debate. So in one sense, even though it's rational discussion and debate, they're still attracting, it's that like-minded people aspect of where we want to interact, where we seek community, in fact. And then there will be other places that are more about having Barneys with other people who have completely opposing views to your own.
I resent the use of the term Barneys.
Speaking of Barney was talking about moderators before. The role of the moderator, and I'll use the ABC website as an example because it's a good one. Before we allow posts on articles on the ABC website, they do all go through a moderation process. Inflammatory things, sexist, racist, no comments along those lines are allowed on, no matter how good the comment. Is that going beyond moderation to censorship?
Well, then we're back to that question of what is truth and who's truth. So we've talked a little bit about some of the different moderation approaches, and that's a fairly hierarchical approach to moderation, and the trend seems to be more towards this community moderation. That's what we see in a lot of
online. Far more democratic than this from on high version of moderation.
Yeah, so there are positives there, but there are negatives in that you get this a fairly populist movement towards what is acceptable to the community, and as Phil was saying, that the danger is that some of the sort of fringe, and when I talk about fringe, I'm not necessarily talking about extremist or unacceptable points of view, but just some of the diversity might be lost to this kind of populist community trend.
Yeah, I guess it means, though, that, you know, that people, that, I mean, the sort of things that you might say about, you know, human relationships on an Islamic forum versus what you might say about human relationships on a leftist feminist forum, for example, like the extremist in one would be the moderate person in the other. So in a way, that sort of community moderation, I think, can help to, you know, maintain a bit of an order and cut down on offence, I guess. So it's sort of a fine line, really, because, I mean, you really don't want to spend your time online having discussions with people that are constantly saying things that you find personally offensive. So, you know.
Well, it's quite interesting, Ian, with the ABC that you mentioned. Even though it's moderated, you know, I've read quite a few of the read it a bit, look for people's comments, and it tends to be quite often end up being a flame war, and that doesn't get moderated by the ABC. So you end up with some contributors just having a go at another contributor again because they disagreed with their point of view, and it just becomes like a, as I said, a bit of a bash around the head because your opinion is different to mine. So obviously the rules by which the moderator is acting is not to discourage that sort of thing.
It's not about courtesy.
Which actually detracts from the discussion. It's probably a lot more hard line.
It's interesting that you said that. So therefore, Jake, would it be better that moderators concentrate on the flame wars and let through, even if it's a sexist remark or a racist remark, if it's a remark that falls in those categories but is not an inflammatory remark, would that go better to enhance the discussion, keep the flame wars out of it, even though they don't fall into the categories on the big banner headlines that we like to categorise them in? Have we got our priorities wrong as moderators?
Well, there's a balance to be found, and it very much depends on the nature of the forum and the nature of the community. To some extent, you'll often find that moderators will step in and try and end these flame wars.
Then they get abused.
then they get abused for being dictatorial or, you know, overly zealous in terms of moderation. But often people in the broader community aren't interested in somebody's personal battle. So people generally just switch off from a flame war that's going on between two particular individuals.
Now, what's going to happen with your research?
Well, what I'm going to do is explore the Australian web domain, and I'm going to see what I can find out about the nature of political debate that's taking place within that domain as a whole.
What have you found so far? Have you stuck your little toe in that or big toe in that yet?
I've done what we call a pilot study, so I can see that there's a lot of political activity going on, and the political parties are using the internet to express their points of view, their perspectives. What I want to see is the extent to which others are then engaging with the perspective that's being presented. So I'm going to take something like the Kevin 07 blog and explore the comments there to see whether what we're seeing are just fans of the Kevin Rudd electoral campaign, or are we seeing lots of people presenting challenging political perspectives.
It would be nice if you could get the list of all the comments that weren't allowed to be posted to that, give you a rounded view of what's actually being written.
That would be interesting.
One of the things Jake's doing is using a tool called Issue Crawler, which crawls across the web and does some really clever stuff in terms of finding relationships between sites. And we probably don't have time to talk about that today, but I reckon we should get Jake on again to talk about that as part of a general discussion about the sort of dealing with really, really large amounts of qualitative data and the tools that you can use to sort of do that, because some interesting stuff out there.
Barney, always nice to have you in the studio. You too, Phil. Thank you very much. And Jake, great to have you back, and I will look forward to talking with you when your research is a little bit more through. Thank you very much. You can find out more about digital living through the ABC Riverina homepage, abc.net.au/Riverina. Follow the links through podcasting and search for digital living.